Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee, and I'm glad you came by today. Today's a good day in the sense that it is my youngest son's birthday. Happy birthday, David. It's also a very, very dear friend's birthday, somebody that I became very close to many years ago when I first started working at the Institute. That's Anthony Chatham. He is one in a million. He's the kind of a person that you can talk to about absolutely, positively anything. Happy birthday, Anthony. And a very funny friend, somebody that I also met at the Institute who for years was the warm-up guy on the late-night show, and that's Eddie Brill. Happy birthday, Eddie Brill. So I think when you have three really, really cool people's birthday on one day, it can't be a bad day. But there's lots of crappy news out there. So let's bring Shell in so we can start sharing some of it. Good morning, Shell.
Well, good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
Doing good, doing good. Happy birthday to David as well and Anthony.
I don't know
Eddie Brill, but I know David and Anthony, and they're both quite spectacular people. So, yeah, it does it does kind of bode well for the day.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. How can it be a bad day with all those, all with such different personalities and yet still a little bit alike, because they're very friendly, very outgoing, people that people like to be friends with. So that's a cool thing.
Yep.
So, but on the news front, it absolutely positively sucks today. I just watched three interviews with a young nurse at the hospital in Dallas who was a part of the team that treated our first patient from Liberia, and it's not unexpected to me, and part of me wants to say, let's don't get hung up on this instead of the real issue at hand, which is learn from your mistakes, move forward. We have a tendency to lament our mistakes. And I don't think this is the time to do that, even though I appreciate this young woman was obviously distraught. She's worked at this hospital for 3 years. She loves it. She's the sole provider for her children and her home. And she doesn't want to lose her job. But she did, from the very beginning, question some of the activity. Again, it's not shocking to me, even though I realize we've never dealt with Ebola, per se, but we've certainly had a really crazy last, I'm going to say, 10 years with bacteria, MRSA, different infections. And years ago, my gosh, Shell, years ago, people got wiped out by the bubonic plague. I mean, how many lessons do we need about bacterial spreading, all the kind of things that we assume until we're in that, that arena, that hospitals, first and foremost, get the whole idea of isolation, protective wear. The CDC is supposed to be overseeing the hospital on every level. Many, many years ago, I'm going to say it was 15 years ago, I applied for a job at a hospital because I thought that I could be beneficial. I thought not only did I want to be a part of an arena that helps people, which has always been my thing, I thought I could help with keeping people in a good place. And I applied as the executive housekeeper. And they asked me to write down what a clean room was. And I was like, okay. So I had to think about it for a little bit. And I talked about mold and mildew. I talked about air conditioning vents. And, of course, I talked about the utensils and things like that that are used in a clean room. Now, a clean room, hospital standards, is supposed to be pristine and sterile from A to Z. It's a fool who believes that's true. I'm sorry. I think the intent was there, but it doesn't happen. Why doesn't it happen is because of us, human beings. Somebody walks in and doesn't have their gloves all the way on. Somebody walks in and forgot to put booties over their shoes. Somebody walks out and starts dripping before they get through the door. I mean, there's a million things. Did you ever watch the House episode when House first came out, when somebody got this horrible disease and the one black doctor caught it and was in the sterile room and he intentionally infected one of the other doctors. Did you ever see that one? Shall?
I never really watched House. I think I watched one or two episodes at the most. I never really watched the show, so I know the characters you're talking about, and I know the premise of the show, but mm-hmm. I don't know of any particular episode.
Well, thinking about everything that's going on right now, it made me think about that. And I thought to myself, again, it was only as good as the people that were working it. And isn't that always the way it is? I mean, you have, and you and I have certainly, in 2 years, done a tremendous amount of shows about training and professionalism and what the right thing is to do in different sets of circumstances. Time and time again, we've talked about it. So, is it shocking to you to find out that protocol wasn't followed in this hospital show?
Yes, it is shocking, because we know better now of how quickly things can spread. I mean, I was shocked. I don't really watch the news. I mean, I've said that on the show before, but I do from time to time. I'll be going around. If I hear a story, I'll stop and I'll listen to it, or I'll hear some things and I'll just tune in later just to watch that one story. And they were talking about the Ebola breakout last night, and they said that they just decommissioned the airplane that this whole thing started on. Why did it take to decommission that airplane? And now you see people going in with hazmat suits. Oh my God. Why wasn't that done the day that this was discovered? You know, and they said that one of the disturbing pieces of news that came out is that and I did not know this, so this was a little bit of a surprise to me, but the Ebola virus can survive on an untouched surface for up to 6 days. Mm-hmm. Now, unless they're going through that plane and physically wiping down every service tray that somebody might have sneezed on, that means that how do they know what seat the person with the Ebola was sitting on? Did anybody ever go in and scrub that particular seat down? Did they go in and find every bathroom that person used and scrubbed all the surfaces of the bathroom down? You know, because if the virus can survive for up to 6 days on an untouched surface, that's a little disturbing. If you haven't mm-hmm. taken that plane and sanitized it from stem to stern,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't
exactly.
decommission it until yesterday.
They didn't even quarantine it. They didn't even close it up and say nobody can go on it or anything. They did nothing. They let it sit there and do whatever. So,
well, now they're saying that nobody can fly if they're suspected of being sick. Now nobody can fly unless they're in, I guess they have to be in a hazmat suit themselves and on a private flight and all this other stuff, which I think is ironic, because when I went on a cruise ship, and a cruise ship is certainly more open than an airplane, although you're out on water longer, and I get that, but you cannot get on a cruise ship if you have any kind of an illness. You have to sign a document saying that you're healthy, that you haven't had a cold in the last 48 hours, that you haven't been having diarrhea or vomiting within the last 48 hours, because they want to make sure that you're not going to get on that ship, because it's a closed, even though you have open decks, the bottom line is it's basically a closed environment. But it's certainly more open than an airplane, and yet people get on an airplane every day coughing, and you know, you look around at some of your passengers, and some of them don't look like they're feeling well.
Mm-hmm.
No? And nobody says anything. People just get on and off airplanes all the time.
Well, and but as bad as that is, isn't it scarier to think there was no protocol at the hospital?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, because
but again,
even though Ebola is new to this country, infectious diseases are not. And
exactly.
There should be one protocol
exactly.
for infectious disease. Once you find out you have something that drastic, infectious disease protocol should go into place. There shouldn't be a different protocol for each disease. There should be a certain type of lockdown protocol for anything that could potentially become an epidemic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there should be an epidemic potential protocol, basically.
Well, and we're talking about hundreds of years here, honey. Hundreds of years that we've been dealing with stuff like this. And this is as good as we can do. The minute something of this of this danger comes in, this is the best we can do. I find it to be disappointing, to say the least. But again, I don't think that the answer now is to dwell on what shoulda, coulda, woulda. It should be on what are we going to do now. So now you've got this young nurse is being called a whistleblower. And as a whistleblower, like we talked about before with the young man earlier this year, it is they have some protection because they're doing this for the betterment of the rest of the world. So she's afraid she's going to lose her job, and she may not lose her job this week, but it will be interesting to see if she loses her job 3 months from now. However, mm-hmm. the point is, she even talks about the fact that when anybody that was on that plane was brought in to be checked, the biggest thing that they're doing, Shell, is taking everybody's temperature. Now, I want to say that have you ever, well, I've taken so many people to the emergency room. Your temperature is supposed to be 98.6, right? Isn't that what we all grew up believing? 98.6 is your normal temperature. Well, for some people, 99.1 is what their temperature always is. Especially
yep.
Kids have a tendency to run a little bit higher temperature. So for me, that's kind of like iffy to be the only thing that's really been initiated that they're doing on a constant basis. Now,
but the other thing to consider about that is something that runs in my family. Our normal temperature for half of my family members, including myself, is 97. I never get to, if I'm 98 or 98.6, that means I'm getting sick.
You have a temperature. That's right.
Right.
Exactly.
I have a temperature. Because my normal temperature is between 97 and 97.5. That's normal for me. I've had that my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
We took my nephew Cody to the doctor yesterday, and his temperature was 97. I mean, it runs in my family. And when I had carditis when I was 6 years old and I was actually dying, I had no fever. And for 2 weeks, they kept sending, you know, this is when they sent doctors from the hospital to the house. They kept taking my temperature, and then we'd find I have no temperature. They told my mom I was just being lazy and give it a couple of days and I'll be fine. Because I was literally laying around, a six-year-old kid, and I had no energy. I could not get up from the couch. And it took an accidental phone call for a doctor to realize that that's not normal for a six-year-old kid to not want to get off of a couch. You know, you don't have a couch potato at 6 years old. Plus the fact a week earlier I was this rambunctious kid, you know, running all over the place. So, and then she realized there was something wrong with my heart. But here I had the infection for several weeks and had no fever. And carditis was a very, very, it was an intense infection, you know. So that's no indicator anyway. Some people don't get fevers. So if that's their only protocol, that's ludicrous.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to confuse anybody. I'm not saying that that's their only protocol, but that's their main protocol from that's been carried over from the country where this started. The show that I watched in the very beginning with the doctor that is on the Today Show all the time. As a matter of fact, she got reprimanded publicly about the fact that she is she went to a restaurant. They ordered takeout food after she got back into the States and pulled up in a car. Nancy Snyderman is the doctor that I'm talking about. And she, of course, made a public statement saying that she was sorry, that she thought everything would be good. Nobody was running a temperature. Everything seemed to be okay. They didn't get out of the car and blah, blah, blah. But it still upset some people. And, of course, mass hysteria is something that I don't think anybody wants to see happen with any of these kind of issues, because that won't be pretty. We've seen what happens just after a hurricane or a weather tragedy. It can be pretty scary. So, but the point is here is that now, how do we move forward? What is going to be the game plan to make sure that everybody is taken care of? Because now there's another nurse, there's issues going on, and the fear, of course, from the young woman that talked today is that there wasn't enough protocol in place to make sure that everybody who took care of this new nurse could get sick. So the point I think we need to take from this is not to keep dwelling on that. It's to move forward and make sure that we do have something in place that every hospital. Now, they had Mehmet Oz on, who's a regular on the show, on the Today Show, and he's an interesting character, if you will. And he talks about, you know, now they're going to try to make every hospital so safe and so this and so that. Well, that's an undertaking that will be almost impossible. So why aren't they pulling in some main hospitals and maybe they shouldn't be large, Shell. I mean, let's think about that. Maybe they shouldn't be great, big, giant, conglomerate hospitals that have got all kinds of wards on them and everything. Maybe they should choose in some of our more like New York or Dallas or I don't know, Boston or places like that, maybe they should choose some hospitals that are a little bit more easy to isolate, a little bit smaller, a little bit newer, so that they're not dealing with you know, leaky windows and right, bad air conditioning and all that kind of stuff, and make those the safe hospitals. Make those the ones that are really, really prepared. It would be easier for them to set up a small hospital than choose one of these great big university teaching hospitals. At least from my point of view, it would be.
It does make sense to me. You know, because it's easier to contain, you have less chance of, I mean, obviously that does make a lot of sense.
So, but I don't know, of course, that that's what is going to take place, because now everybody's in panic mode. And we get in panic mode, and that's when you make the most mistakes, very sadly. So, on the note of Ebola, again, just for our listeners, just for the people that listen to this little rinky-dink radio show with Rainey and Shelley, let's just be safe ourselves. Let's just concentrate on what we know is tried and true. I wouldn't go visiting anybody in any hospitals right now. I mean, unless you have a child there and you're camping out there like I have done many times. I wouldn't go just to bring flowers to a friend who's been hospitalized for something. I would take care about the personal hygiene, which we talked about this week. Do some of the little things that you know should be done for your children, because, of course, when your children are in group scenarios like school, like Bible camp, like this, like that, you know, all the things that we bring to the kids, again, personal hygiene is going to be of the utmost importance. Shell, have you got some other things to add to those things that we've talked about through the week that I'm not remembering?
You mean specifically about Ebola or about the other?
No, about just safeguarding yourself, you know, as far as keeping yourself safe as you can be on your own.
Well, I mean, when it comes down, like one of the things I talked about the other day was not to rely on pharmaceutical prescriptions such as antibiotics and things like that to boost your immune system, because they can assist the immune system, but they cannot replace your immune system. Our immune systems are very complex, and the way to boost the immune system is, well, people don't like to hear it, but it's diet and exercise and thinking properly. I mean, it in the beginning, it may sound like a lot of work if you kind of have a not-so-good diet, if you're sort of a couch potato, and if you sit around, you know, begrudging your life, you know, it can take some effort to turn that around. But once you get yourself to a point where you're making better food choices, where you're drinking more water and not drinking soda, soda is very, very harsh on the immune system, by the way. I'm an avid vegetarian. I wish that people would make that choice. But if I had to tell somebody to do one single thing to start improving their health, it would be to stop drinking soda. Soda is one of the most caustic things to our immune system. The only soda that's not, believe it or not, is ginger ale, which surprised me. I thought all soda was really hazardous, but ginger ale, if it's made with real ginger, there's some brands out there that are junk, but if you're getting a good grade ginger ale that's made with real ginger, it actually can have some health benefits. It can settle a stomach, and because of the ginger in it, it sort of offsets some of the acidicness of soda. So that's kind of an interesting point.
Interesting.
But,
yeah, that is interesting.
But just make better choices. Start cleaning up your act, because the stronger your immune system is, you can be around AIDS, you can be around Ebola, and at least have a fighting chance that if you contract it, you'll survive. All right? I mean, we hear all these stories about people like that one nurse, the first nurse on the scene that helped that gentleman, is still alive. She's not completely out of the woods, but she's doing well. So she must have a very strong immune system, and, you know, she's fighting it. But keep in mind that just drugs alone cannot replace your immune system. So it is our responsibility. Each one of us was gifted with a miraculous body, and you should look at it like you look at your house. You know, you're going to paint your house periodically. You're going to tune up your car periodically. You do oil changes. You know, it surprises me that people take better care of their property than they do of their own body. And it really is our responsibility to do the right things to get it as strong as it can, so that if something happens to us, we have a fighting chance of recovering, beating it, and recovering it and being stronger from there going forward. So just add, you know, like you said, be aware, you know, carry hand sanitizer with you. Be aware of surfaces that you're touching, and if it's a very highly populated area, maybe you shouldn't lean. You know, you see people all the time, they lean on everything, you know. Maybe you should get out of the habit of leaning on stuff. My niece gets freaked out by that. She's so funny. You know, she goes anywhere with her kids. They're not allowed leaning on anything. I think it's adorable, you know. I used to think she was fanatical. Now, not so much.
Well, there are, you know, idiosyncrasies about things that, in my history in restaurants and all the times that I've spent in emergency rooms and hospitals, not so much with me, but with other people, I've worked in a restaurant before when somebody's come in and sat down at a dirty table and started eating off of somebody else's plate, Shelley. I have seen people do some of the most unbelievable things that I would be mortified. If my 2-year-old walked up to a plate in a restaurant and took something off of it, I would be mortified. And yet I have seen grown-ups, adults, in some cases college professors, if you will, do just that. So we can be, you know, lost in la-la land sometimes when it comes to our own safety. So now is the time to concentrate. Be aware. Don't go fanatical. Don't go crazy. But certainly be aware of what you are touching, how often you, you know, you clean your hands, your arms, all that kind of stuff. This is a time to be aware of that. Is it a time to go crazy? Again, no. But be aware and be conscious of the fact that you may be saving your own life. I mean, don't be silly. So on that note, we're gonna leave Ebola alone for a little while. I've still got the news on. If something else happens, I will alert us during the show. But as we speak right now, the controversy, of course, is the hospital in question, the fact that there was no real quarantine, nothing in place. The one young nurse that spoke today talked about the fact that she tried to get somebody to answer her questions as to why, if she had to cover her feet, cover her hands, cover her arms, why her neck? She had a hazmat mask on, and yet from the bottom of her chin to like the upper part of where your neck bone is in the front of you was bare. And she wondered why nobody worried about that, and she couldn't get an answer from anybody. So nurses, of course, I think are, you know, aware a lot of times. If they're a good nurse, they're a lot more aware than a lay person would be in regard to the things that this nurse talked about today. So that's where we stand with all of that. And then on another issue that we talked about yesterday, the poop has hit the fan, so to speak, with our movie star. Stephen Collins now has been, the tape is being played live on the air, and now someone else has come out of the woodwork to say that he sexually abused them so many years ago, and that there is some truth to all this that is going on. So as a side note, this is a story that is upsetting, I think. Shelley and I talked about that yesterday. It's disappointing when you hear these things about people that we became enamored by in the role that they played on television. And disappointing that for all this time, nobody said anything. And it opens up the gate for me to say to young people who might be listening, I have a lot of grandchildren, and they get kids to listen all the time, and then I'll hear feedback later, or they listen to it recorded on my Facebook page later in the day. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago when we talked about children being sexually abused. Please don't keep it a secret. Please, please, please don't keep it a secret. Tell somebody. Somebody cares, and somebody will help. And if you can't find anybody to help, call me. Don't keep it a secret, because things like this don't go away in your head, in your heart. They don't go away, especially if you're being subjected to that kind of abuse by someone that you believe loves you or is supposed to love you. So please share that. Don't keep it a big secret, because it doesn't go away. It just gets buried a little bit deeper, but it's still there. And that's what we're finding out now about this deal with Stephen Collins. He's got people coming out of the woodwork. And if it is true, and I'm not saying that it is, because I also, have issue with people thinking that they can get money for something like this. So that's always, that always plays into this at some point in time. And if that's the case, then I feel bad for him. But if he really is guilty of subjecting young people. Yesterday we read something about the wife saying about boys, and now I'm hearing about girls. So something still, I don't know, just, of course, I can be a real Pollyanna about some things. I choose to think the better of people than the worst. But something about this is making me feel like it's too confusing. The facts are not really in place. So, but if you're keeping a secret like that, don't keep it anymore. Tell somebody, somebody who can help you and somebody who can take you out of harm's way if you're still in a position where it could happen to you again. Please, please, please tell somebody. You got anything to add to that, Shel? Shelley?
Oh, sorry about that. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, now I'm on the same page with you that, yeah, I find it disappointing that all of a sudden all these stories start coming out of the woodwork. I understand that sometimes, you know, victims, for one reason or another, maybe they feel the person is, you know, too famous or whatever, and they choose not to say anything, and then it comes out years later. I wish that things like this didn't always hit the media, for the simple reason that it kind of goes with what we talk about with bullying, okay? If, in fact, and again, this is all conjecture on my point, on my part, but it seems like nothing has happened in recent time, that this is something, this is a demon from his past that somehow he overcame. Now, he wouldn't have overcome it if he didn't feel what he was doing was wrong. And stop it. If this is an ongoing problem with him, then I think maybe it should have surfaced the news. But the fact that he was seeing a psychologist about this, that he was trying to get a handle on it, means that he recognized it was something he needed to stop with. And this is where I think the media can hurt us, because they take the news, they sensationalize it. What it does is it re-victimizes the victims. It makes them relive what happened. And sometimes if a perpetrator can tell their victim, look, I'm really sorry, I don't know, Marcus, if a perpetrator could tell their victim, look, I was really sick back then, I'm so sorry I did this thing to you, and they can resolve things that way, I think it's a better outcome for both sides. It allows the perpetrator some redemption, and it allows the victim to see remorse in their, you know, in the person's that did them harm at one point. And it can be a healing relationship on both sides. But when it hits the media and everything is handled through the media and both sides start defending themselves, you know, the person that's making the accusations now has to relive this thing over and over and over again, and it becomes bigger than life. It becomes more traumatic. And the person who maybe was actually trying to overcome this now becomes entrenched, and it can ruin their lives forever. You know, and like I said, he took that role on Seventh Heaven, and he might have done that as a way to have something redeeming. Now, if he was doing it on the show set, and this was something that carried through his career up till now, then some of what I'm saying doesn't carry.
Mm-hmm.
But if, in fact,
mm-hmm.
he did have remorse and regret and was trying to get over this problem, then I think that's when the media stepping in and sensationalizing everything can have a counter effect.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, that holds true of every story we talk about. The opinions of others, because your opinion and my, we find that Shelley and I are very close. And if you listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that we don't always agree about everything. And, of course, this is the issue when the media gets involved, because they assess things and put in their own, their own opinions, which is a part of being in our world. And I like that. I want everybody to be able to voice their opinion, of course, but then things get confusing. Then things get a little bit gray, because of all the various opinions, which is, again, not to say that that's wrong, but...
The one thing I have an issue with the media is not necessarily that they give their own opinion, although sometimes that is the case, like with Rush Limbaugh and people like that. But what I'm talking about is inaccurate coverage. They'll get a piece of the story, and they run with it with sensationalistic headlines. And then when the rest of the facts come out that may make that headline no longer true or inaccurate, that's never given front page attention anymore. It's done in the fine print or not even dealt with at all. So now you're always left with this big, major, sensationalistic headline out there, and very, very rarely does anything that mitigates that ever hit the airwaves with the same intensity, and a lot of people never even hear it.
Well, yeah, that's all true as well. It's also... it's also one of those kind of scenarios that's up for the conjecture of anybody who just wants to quietly watch it on television and form their own opinion, which is a part of, you know, living in the United States of America, having the ability to form your own opinion. But when it's about somebody losing their freedom, when it's about someone, you know, their whole life being thrown in the garbage, that's
right.
When I think there should be, you know, I don't know, a higher judgment, which, of course, if you believe in God, then you know that that's true. And I've heard people say, you know, God knows that I'm innocent and I'm just going to go with that. And if you can go there, then... I guess maybe you find some peace. But what if you can't? And what if your life is changed and ruined forever? That hurts me. And mind you, I want somebody who's hurt a child to be punished. I would be lying if I didn't say that's true. But on the same token, I would want to know absolutely, positively that it was true. That it was true, and that seems to be very elusive today because of all the extra input. You know, it seems to be very elusive and hard to grab a hold. It's like the truth has become more slippery than the lies, and that's a shame.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, that's really, really
that.
A shame. Mm-hmm.
Is
so,
there any statement from Steve Collins yet? I was trying to find something where he made a statement, and I couldn't really, I mean, this was the day before yesterday, but have you found anything where he's commenting on any of this yet? Is he denying it? Is he saying it's truthful? Because I never heard him actually admit that the recording was his. Has he ever gone there yet?
I don't think so. I think that, like I said yesterday, the thing that he did that, for me, was probably not the smartest thing for him to do, that for people like me who kind of like weigh everything. He stepped out of all of his, you know, he's not going to be an MC. He stopped the movie that he's supposed to star in, a new special that was supposed to be on, he's not going to be in. So if
he was released from all those. The only thing that he resigned from was the Actors Guild. Everything else he was basically ousted from.
So, but just the Actors Guild, is that because he's embarrassed, because his feelings are hurt, and because he's licking his wounds, or is that because he's guilty? Who knows? Until he says something. I mean, it's conjecture on our part, too, to even try to make something out of any of those actions, because, like you say, you know, just because the media says he stepped down, that doesn't mean that he had a choice. So I don't know. Anything like that, as far as I'm concerned, is horrible. Horrible. Every time... You know, at the Institute, because I've always been privy to people's personal stories, there are some stories that I still have in my head that if I recount them in my head, I just sit and cry. I mean, that's how sad they are, some of them. And to think that some people live through them and come out on the other side in such a good place, a lot of them, is, of course, gives me strength, makes me want to tell people that I see suffering. You know, I know people that have been through much worse than this. But, of course, you know, who listens to that? Nobody. But it's the truth. It is the truth. I have met people that I think are heroes from the get-go because they've risen above the unkindness, the abuse, the mistreatment when they were children, and now they're good, apparently balanced people that are living a decent life, and a lot of them have pulled themselves into arenas where they can help others. So, but then again, the streets are full. The homeless shelters are full of people that maybe had the same kind of grief in their early lives, or maybe not even close to being as bad as some of the stories I've heard, but they still haven't been able to pull themselves out of it. So it's all about people. It's all about who they are and who they can be and how they feel about what they can do for themselves. I mean, some of us are amazing survivors, and some of us just can't. They just can't lift themselves out of that muck and that mire to live their life, and that's a sad thing. So again, if somebody out there is listening and you feel like that's where you are, you have to tell somebody because you have a chance. You know, you really have a chance. It's when something bad happens to you, it can kill you or it can make you stronger. That is a true fact. It's proven day in and day out in a million different ways. So you have a chance always, 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 always. So
I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, you and I have seen it so many times, honey. So many times.
Right.
I have a favorite story about a young woman that I met many years ago who was suffering from anorexia. And she was tiny to begin with, but when I first met her, she weighed like 67 pounds. And she did the program, and she'd get pretty good there with all the support. She'd go back to her apartment, and it would just start all over again. Her mother left her home up north, wherever it was they were from, and the rest of her family, and she stayed with her in an apartment, and every day, every minute, every hour, they were together until she got her through that. Now, this young woman is healthy, beautiful, happy, and I thought that when she walked out of the doors of the Institute, I would never see her again. And yet, again, she survived. But really, why did she survive? She survived because she finally opened the doors to somebody who loved her so much that she dedicated herself to make sure she was okay.
Wow.
So telling somebody, no matter how you want to break it down, is one of the most important things you can do for yourself. Don't keep secrets like that. Secrets for somebody else are one thing. And, of course, Shelley and I talk about this all the time. It's very beneficial to have a diary or a journal or anything like that. And sometimes if that's really all you think you have, even that is beneficial. To be able to write down your feelings, be able to write down your fears, be able to write down everything that helps you take the garbage out. It makes a difference. So
yeah, writing is very therapeutic.
even if you're not a talented writer, even if the words come out awkward and you don't know what words to use, because what happens is when you start writing your feelings down and your thoughts down, you'll find that they come in layers. So the thing that's bothering you, the thing that's haunting you, you write that down, and then all of a sudden another thought pops into your head, and then another thought pops into your head. And what it is it's like a clearinghouse for your emotions. It is, in fact, like taking the garbage out. That's a great analogy. I mean, if you never took the garbage out in your house, you'd get to a point where you wouldn't be able to walk through the front door because of the stench, you know. And our emotions are the same way. You have to clear them. First of all, you have to bring them into your consciousness and deal with them. If you keep shoving them back there and trying to ignore that they exist, they fester like an infection, you know. And so writing in a journal or a diary, just getting your thoughts out and letting them flow, because you'll be surprised. As soon as you write that one comment down that you think is haunting you, you're going to see there's a lot more behind it that's going to surprise you that'll come out. And as you write, you'll clear. And it doesn't mean anybody else has to read it. It's for you. It's for you to clear your thoughts. And as you talk something out, even if it's just with yourself or a piece of paper, you'll find that things will improve a little bit for you. You'll get a little bit handle on the situation. You might get angry and decide to get help. You know, you might console yourself, but you'll have some reaction, whether it's just to accept what's happened or to be proactive and do something about it. You know, sometimes just seeing it down on paper, you're like, this isn't acceptable. I have to do something about this, and you'll choose to get help. But at any rate, it starts with getting it down on paper and clearing that emotional blockage.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, again, you know, sometimes, and this is going to be hard for somebody to believe if they're in mid-trauma, sometimes if you can write down something and then read it back to yourself, you'll find out, not all the time, I wish it was all the time, but a good part of the time, that you've made it in to something much bigger than it needed to be. And if you can do that and reassess it from the outside looking in, many times that's beneficial for you. And sometimes after you do that, you can let go of it. But if you hang on to it and keep giving it the power and the worth that it affected upon you in the very beginning, then it just gets bigger and meaner and has more tentacles and gets a hold of you. So, you know, I've shared this story many times with my husband and I. And 47 years we've been together. And it hasn't always been easy. I'd be lying if I said it was. But when it would get really bad, I would write him a letter. And sometimes he wouldn't even get it, because when I read the letter over again, I'd think, oh, my God, get a grip, Rainey. You know, what are you all upset about that for? Because once I saw it from another point of view, which was me looking back at me from a different angle, didn't mean as much. It lost a lot of the poison. It lost a lot of the anger. And I would be better. I would be better. I mean, it's just like conversations with friends. Shelley and I use each other like that all the time. If we are in a place where something just seems like we purely and simply cannot get over this bump in the road all by ourselves. So we talk, and because we know each other so well, we can say, you know, no, that isn't, I don't know why you're feeling that way about it, because that's not who you are. And sometimes you know the answer yourself, you just need somebody else to say it to you. And it's beneficial in your healing, it's beneficial in your good mental health. And I'll tell you something, many of our challenges come from not being able to talk about the little things. The little things. The big things, we're all, you know, oh my God, this happened and blah, 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 and I hate that son of a da, 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 da. You know,
It's the little things that fester, and it's the little things that you forget to let go of. So, again,
right.
You know, I want to real quick read this because I just pulled it up. So far, the Stephen Collins child molestation scandal has been a byproduct of an ongoing feud with former wife Faye Grant and recordings made by a therapist. Faye Grant has basically labeled the veteran and actor as a monster, but now one of his alleged victims herself has come forward with a complaint. The woman was 13 at the time and has sought out investigators with her allegations, and she is believed to be one of the girls he admitted molesting on tape. You can hear that chilling recording of Collins online, by the way. According to the reports, the incident involves a relative of a neighbor when Stephen Collins lived on Havenhurst Drive in West Hollywood in the summer of 1983. So, again, do we really think this happened? Collins confesses to exposing himself to the girl, though he says that he went back to the victim and made amends years later. It's not clear how. The NYPD, which first received the complaint, referred the matter to the L.A. County Sheriff's Department because the incident occurred under their jurisdiction. A sheriff's department, the investigation centers around the indecent exposure and the crime of annoying or molesting a child, as Stephen Collins is listed as suspect. He is also accused of a recent sexual misconduct in an incident as recent as 2007, according to reports, meaning this saga is likely to play out for some time. Don't look for those Seventh Heaven repeats to return anytime soon. So, again, you know, is this a major bashing of a man who maybe made some mistakes, but are they, you know, I don't know. Are they out of control now? Have we changed some of the words to make them sound worse? Who knows? Who knows, right? But the deal is for you out there. That's what I'm concerned about at this time. If you are out there and you are in a place where you know you need to tell somebody something, then please tell somebody. You know, there's the 211 number that we haven't talked about in quite a long time. It's gotten very, very big, and there are opportunities there to share almost anything. Please take advantage of that. And as I said, you can always call me. I won't go anywhere with it. I'll just listen, and maybe that's really all you need. But if you are struggling with something like that in your life, you need to tell somebody. So, the other thing that I couldn't find out anything about, Shell, was after I heard that one report about the New Jersey football team, that, you know, now it's about sexual abuse and it's about something that was really awful. And seven boys are facing criminal charges. So I want to remind everybody what Shelley and I have explained to all of you. Bullying and criminal actions are different. Bullying means somebody's making fun of your clothes, the way you talk, your nose, maybe not pulling you into the circle of friends that you want to be a part of, or maybe everybody gets up and leaves when you sit down at the table. That's not nice. That's bullying. But once somebody puts their hands on you or tries to hurt you in any way, shape, or form, it's no longer bullying. It's a criminal act. And that's when you bring in the police. You don't bring in the police because nobody wants to sit with you at lunch. That's bullying. So I hope everybody understands that and gets the difference in charges. And And I think that there's some confusion about some of that.
Right.
So,
right.
The other thing that I wanted to talk about today, that I decided that the Ebola was such a big subject, and with all the news that I heard today, but I'm going to open up this arena so that everybody knows about it, because we're going to talk about it next Monday. And that is a story about an organization of educators set up a sting. And the idea was to catch some young men who have been perpetrators and have been attacking young girls in bathrooms.
Mm. Wow.
So
you mean
yes, in a middle school, Shell, in a middle school.
Wow.
So they actually subjected a challenged young girl with you know, with issues, a special child, to be she was waiting in a bathroom. And they set her up in a sting. She was supposed to stay in the bathroom and see if the boys came after her.
She was the bait.
And the bait. Thank you. I could not think of that word to save my soul. And they forgot. The administrators forgot what they were doing, got carried away with their day. The young girl went and set herself up and ended up being sodomized.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So now, of course, all of these administrators are, you know, in this place where everybody is trying to figure out, you know, what they were thinking and why administrators would take it upon themselves to set up a scenario like that. And the jeopardy that they put that child in is unconscionable. I mean, I don't know how they're going to get out of this, and I don't know what kind of feedback is going to come from this. But tomorrow, since we'll just kind of rehash this week, we probably won't have the opportunity to talk a lot about this. But I think that something has to be done with people that take the law into their own hands. And I do believe that this is probably the worst case scenario that I could even imagine, don't you think? So
I have so many comments about that. We don't have time for it, but wow, that's an awful story, and that's a true, that is completely irresponsible, you know, reprehensible conduct. How do they set this girl up like that and then not make sure that she's completely safe? And like you said, when people take the law into their own hands, they don't know what they're doing. They don't take the proper precautions. You know, police don't use civilians except under very extreme cases, and then they have to do a lot of things to prepare the civilian. That's why the police don't like using civilians, because civilians aren't trained to know what to do if everything goes south, you know. And then to set this girl up and then to go on about their days and forget about it and not even give her the support, it's absolutely reprehensible.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just shows you why lay people are not supposed to take the law into their own hands yet again. I mean, we should know
exactly.
That. We've seen it times in a million different scenarios. Vigilante the day never served the purpose that it was meant to serve.
Nope.
So that is what it is. And but one thing I want to put out there again, I mentioned it last week, but I so love it, and it's so true. The truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. Let it loose, and it will defend itself. Remember
That's right.
That, everybody. Remember that. So go out and have a good day today, and We're supposed to be in for a little cold spurt here in South Florida, which will be refreshing and we're all looking forward to.
Oh, yeah.
So friends up north are getting snow already, and they're not ready for that this early.
Yeah, not even Halloween yet.
Yeah, exactly. So God bless everybody. Have a good one, and we'll be back tomorrow. Bye-bye. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Rainey. Thanks, everyone. We'll speak to you in the morning.